Before we begin this episode, we just wanted to give a quick shout out to our friends at EastForged, an Australian small business specializing in cold brewed nitro tea. You can get 15% off your purchase using our code UA15 at their online store at eastforged.com.
So to give a bit of background about the awesome award-winning cold brew tea, we had a chat to one of the co-founders, Kim, and we were so inspired by her genuine drive in finding an exciting way to introduce people into the traditional Asian culture of tea brewing, whilst also providing a healthy alternative to normal iced teas that are packed with artificial sweeteners and flavours.
After trying it ourselves, we were dead set blown away about how unique the taste was and the drinking experience was. It has this like really silky smooth and foamy texture that's as refreshing as cracking a cold one with the boys, but also has the health benefits that you'd get from a cup of tea.
So have a try of it yourself. And as we said, visit eastforge.com with the code UA15 to get 15% off your purchase. There's heaps of different flavors to explore and it really hits different after you give it a few goes.
Thank you so much, EastForge, for continuing such a traditional part of our culture. We really hope you guys enjoy it, like it, and if you do, let us know what your favorite flavor is. Anyway, on to the episode. Welcome to Unapologetically Asian, the place where we talk about navigating through adulthood as Asian Australians. Today, you're joined by Twi,
Tiana,
and Natalie Tran.
Natalie Tran, need we say any more? Should just end the episode right there. Just kidding. For those who don't know, Natalie Tran, also known to many as Community Channel YouTube, is an Asian Australian YouTuber, actress and comedian who grew her online fame from making hilarious skits about everyday Western conundrums, such as where did the term king size come from and how frightening it is when there's a gap in the change room curtain. Since her humble beginnings creating YouTube videos back in 2009 whilst at university, Natalie has amassed over a million subscribers on YouTube and has since moved on to different projects, appearing in state government advertisements, comedy series such as Mr. In Between on Foxtel, and is now an absolute Australian icon. After shooting a mini campaign to get on the show, we have had the absolute pleasure to interview Natalie on this episode and can't wait to share with y'all the wonderful conversation we had with her about her career, Asian representation in the media, and the beautiful community that is building within the Aussie Asian landscape now. So, without further ado, let's get to it.
So, a couple of weeks ago, Twi and I decided to come up with a campaign to get our get onto the podcast. So, when we started this on my bedroom floor, we were like, okay, who do we want on the podcast? And we both said in unison, Natalie Tran from Community Channel. And the reason being is because whenever we'd go on YouTube, we would gravitate towards your videos, Nat, and it's because they gave us a sense of joy and it just made us laugh. Also because you're Asian as well, and within the community there is not many. So thank you so much for noticing our little campaign and coming on the show. Like literally when you slid into our DMs, Twi and I were freaking out. So thank you so much for spending your Friday night with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I never know what to say when people say such kind things. Like, it blows me away. That's very kind of you. Honestly, I feel terrible as well. My phone can't use Instagram. So Instagram is something I just check on my computer rarely. When people were tagging me, I saw it on Instagram. And again, like, I never know how to respond when anyone wants to talk to me. That's not the way it goes in my real life. So it was a big, I'm like, wow, people want to talk to me? That's very nice.
We feel like we've kind of gotten to know the present day you because of all your videos and, you know, how relatable your videos are. But let's rewind it back and take it back to young Nat. Let's find out what she was like. So I guess for you, tell us a bit about your childhood.
I grew up in Western Sydney. My parents moved to Australia with my sister in 1981, I think. And they came via boat from Vietnam, which may be the same story with your families. And my sister was 4, I think, and she was on the boat. And they lived in Homebush for a little bit with some more family members in like a 2-bedroom unit. It was quite a lot of people. And then eventually we moved, still had other family members, but we moved to where we lived afterwards. And I was really lucky. I mean, I think if you have a family who is loving, you've won the lottery, really. I had a very lovely childhood.
And so, Nat, you kind of touched on before that you were born in Australia, mm-hmm. But, you know, you've come from a immigrant family, and that's the same kind of story as Twi and myself.
Yeah.
What was it like for you to grow up as an Asian in Australia?
I grew up around an area called Auburn, which is not so Asian. It wasn't so Asian when I grew up there. We had quite a diverse primary school. Interestingly, my father was a Vietnamese teacher, and he taught further out west. And his school had a very large Asian population. And the high school that a lot of the kids there went to also had a very high Asian population. In high school, a little bit different, not so many Asians, I think different people from different backgrounds. But then for the last couple of years of my schooling, my parents sent me to a private school, hoping, I guess, that money could solve the problems that I was presenting to them. It was very stressful last few years of schooling, but that had a lot less. I guess I had international students, but I think it's a little bit different because of just, again, socioeconomically, it's very different when you go to a private school and you're not coming from the same kind of family. That was very different. I probably felt othered then. To be honest with you, the conversation about that probably started a bit later in life for me, to be really transparent with you. Probably really blissfully naive. Well, I mean, not entirely, but I mean, I think that it came to the foreground a lot more as I got older.
I feel the exact same way, because I didn't really think about it. Like, I felt othered or whatnot, but I kind of just went with the flow. Didn't really like bother me, or I didn't really pay attention to, you know, for example, diversity in media and stuff. Like, that didn't cross my mind. But yeah, it wasn't until recently, maybe a few years ago, and especially since Tiana and I started the podcast, which is where we're kind of like now balls deep into like the whole, you know, identity, and, you know, the identity and belonging has really, you know, started to become a passion point for me. And I can say probably for Tiana as well.
Well, it's a huge part of who you are, right? And I think as you start to talk, I mean, when you're young, I think so much of life is just trying to fit in.
Yeah. And
maybe that's where, I don't know, maybe that's where internalized racism or things like that start to spring just a little bit, because when you're little, I mean, you do weird things when you're little, you know. I remember not wanting kids from the private school to come to my house because our house didn't look like theirs. And I really hope as an adult that I'm not the kind of person who cares about that stuff. But when you're a kid, you think about it, or when you're a kid, you don't want to be different. So you're just kind of reacting. But then I guess as you get older, you start to go, hey, why are things the way they are? You start to think about why things are different. And it can be quite angering. It can be sad. Yeah, but definitely stuff that happened to me more as a young adult than a child.
Twi and I have had this conversation before about, you know, the term Asian Australian and how that has two different parts. But as you said before, like, I guess when you're younger, you just desperately want to assimilate, or you want to belong. And then it's not until where you're older where you're like, okay, it's actually possible to take both sides of this narrative of our identity, right? We are Asian, but we're also Australian. So there are two different sides that we are trying to, I guess, form a bridge across or be a part of. So do you think, like, when you reference like your young adult years, did you ever feel a push or a pull between being Asian or being Australian? Or what was that identity journey like for you?
Yeah, I remember, I guess, to be honest, I made like my first close Asian friends later in high school, and that was quite different because I mean, even just when I think about this with your podcast, this is really silly, but AZN, they had it written all over their rulers and stuff, because we had and like they had sticker photos and just things I'd never seen before.
Sticker photos.
I had no idea what a sticker photo was. I was like, how'd you get this to print so small? It had AZN and I didn't know what that was. And so I was like, what's AZN? I remember one of them getting really angry at me and going, what do you mean, what's AZN? Well, she goes, say it quickly. And I was like, AZN, AZN. And she's like, say it quicker than that. I'm like, AZN, AZN. I was like, just like, what is this? I was like, she eventually just had to tell me. So I remember meeting these friends and thinking, oh, yeah, there are these differences that we have with other people. And some of them are really unfair and some of them are fair. I remember I started working when I was 14, and you get more exposed to the public. When I was little, I'm sure you did as well, you deal with racism, people yell things at your family, it's not very nice. I never liked traveling around when I was young, my family loved going to around Australia. It was just horrible, especially back then. Peak Pauline Hanson. Really, it was awful. I guess you just kind of block that stuff out when you're kid. You just got bigger priorities. Like, I just have to get a Cornetto. Like, you just got, like, got bigger stuff to do. But yeah, I remember starting to work and encountering different kind of racism, or when I left school, I'm trying to get a job and it was really hard to get a job. I guess that's when you start to have to, like anyone, I mean, I sound very privileged, but I guess the reality, maybe not for really empathetic, lovely people, but for me, at least as a young adult, I didn't start thinking about it till it started to impact my world as much as it did, or I saw it impacting other people. I saw it. I mean, you see your parents getting yelled at when you're a kid and it's awful. But again, like, I just think when you're a kid, your knee-jerk reaction is to feel embarrassed and you don't question it. Oh no, why are my parents so embarrassed? Like, and now I'm an adult. I'm like, what? I'd beat the shit out of someone. Like, don't even try. You know, I by the time I hit university, if someone was racist on a train, which was so often back then, I got in arguments all the time. You know, that's very, very different to being young and being embarrassed about being Asian. Mm-hmm. But obviously something happens. And I remember I had a very long-term partner, and he was like my first partner, but he was white, and you just have so many and you just realize, and you're just like, wow, you just do not live the same life I do. Again, some of it's socioeconomic, some of it's just, but you're just like, wow, you just do not live the same life I do. You catch a train and you don't have to deal with stuff that makes you feel terrible about who you are for the rest of the day. Tell me about that life. But yeah, it's really weird. I feel really embarrassed about how I felt as a kid, but I mean, now I have nieces. I look at them. I'm like, no, I was little. You know, they don't know anything. They don't have money. You're embarrassed. But yeah, by the time I was a young adult, definitely much more engaged, a lot more angry. If someone would say things, I'd just fight back. Pauline Hanson was a big part of, I feel, growing up. And Australia was very hostile. Not that it's not now, but I remember Asians were a targeted minority back then.
We've had the pleasure of speaking to a few different guests that have also grown up around that same time period now. We spoke to Benjamin Law the other day. Yeah, I said the other day, but this is kind of like last year. We spoke to Diana Nguyen, and they were both talking about how, you know, when Pauline Hanson made her speech, about how they felt so different. And so when you reference that, I think it's something that a lot of people can relate to.
And now she's like kind of coming back, but she's attacking other minority groups. It's like, girl, get rid of this lady. Why is she still here?
You can change it up, attack different people.
She's trying to keep it fresh.
No, thank you for sharing that part of your story. I know it's kind of like, it's weird to reflect back on how you used to act, because obviously you're a lot different now. And I know you were mentioning like, oh yeah, you're embarrassed of how you were back then. But it's like, that's true. We've got to like cut our old selves some slack, because again, it's like we didn't fucking know you better.
Look at kids and look at teenage. I thought I was going to get a Blink 182 tattoo. I was an idiot. Like, but you know, kids are kids. You haven't felt things. I think all of us are learning constantly.
Mm. I'm still learning. I still feel like I'm learning. My gosh. Every day.
Definitely.
Every day.
Yeah. But I feel very Australian. I mean, you asked about being Australian. I don't mean this like she had a lot more going on than this, but a Caucasian Australian lady was a big part of my childhood. She helped raise me, and you know, I travel with Vegemite to this day. Like, if I carry Vegemite with me, if I don't have it, I get really upset and have to buy it for like $40 at a weird international grocery shop. I have a very strong, I feel, Australian accent. I feel very Australian. The only thing that can disrupt that is, I guess, you know, someone telling you on a train that you're not, or some offhanded remark. But yeah, I feel very Australian.
During uni, I remember when I joined, I joined the Vietnamese Student Association because my mum was like, oh my gosh, Gianni, you should join. It's so cool. And I was like, nah, mum, that's lame. And then eventually I joined anyways. And I remember when I first joined and I was surrounded by a lot of people that were Vietnamese, of course, and a lot of people would say, oh, Tiana, you're really whitewashed for an Asian. Mm-hmm. And I was so confused because I was like, oh, you know, back in high school I was considered really Asian, and then now I'm in uni and I'm considered not Asian enough. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess we kind of spoke a bit before about feeling Asian or feeling Australian, but have you ever felt you were a whitewashed Asian, or were you the token Asian, or did you ever feel anything like that?
Did you ever categorize yourself as any type of Asian?
I know when I was at uni and made friends at a party, this was so much fun, and they were all Asian, and I went to a party by myself. I don't usually, this was obviously when I was young and much more ago. I went to a party where I didn't really know anyone except the birthday girl. And I met this group of friends and they were all Asian and they were just so much fun. We became really close friends and they happened to live near me and we just got really tight. And then we went grocery shopping one night and they saw me grab some 2-minute noodles. And the guy, my friend KC, goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm just grabbing some noodles." And he goes, "No, but what?" And then you hit my hand. And I'll never forget, he hit my hand. He goes, "No, you picked the wrong ones." I go, "What?" He goes, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "I'm getting noodle." I just genuinely didn't know. And he goes, "Why aren't you getting me goreng?" I'm like, "What's me goreng?" And then he yelled at his partner and he's like, "Sil, she doesn't know what me goreng is." And then we bought it. We went home. I ate it. And I was like, "What have I been doing with my life? What's been going on? How stupid have I been? What has this country done to me?" Right. Because if you have me goreng, it is a joke that any other noodle is.
I want to know, what did you pick up in the first place? Do you
just
remember?
Some Maggi 2 minutes.
Oh, the Maggi.
Oh, my God, girl.
Oh, wait, Nat.
I don't know, man. Like the soy sauce is Maggi. How am I going to know? Like,
this is a random side note, but do you guys remember the cheese flavored Maggi 2 minute noodles?
No, that sounds gross.
It sounds gross, but it was so good. I promise you, it was so good. What about the tomato flavor?
Nah.
Oh,
obviously, none of these were good. They haven't lasted. Like, obviously, Kiana, none of these are good. They didn't keep them in the range.
Maybe I just have a very interesting taste.
They sound blasphemous. They sound terrible.
You know what? It was good at the time. And then I probably did the same thing as you. I discovered mee goreng and I did not turn back.
I'm saying, when you're young, you don't know stuff. You're stupid. Like, I didn't know about mee goreng. I was a young adult before I figured out mee goreng. But in that moment, they were like, "Oh, you're so white. How could you eat Maggi noodles?" And they were genuinely like, they just didn't understand. They're like, "I don't get it. Do you not have Asian friends?" I'm like, I guess I just haven't eaten 2 minute noodles in front of an Asian friend. Haven't gone grocery shopping.
And you're probably like, "I'm never going to do it again."
Oh, I know. Like, it's crazy. Mee goreng's so good. Like, mee goreng's so good. But you're right. Like, the moment I hang out with even my partner, to be honest with you, I feel very Asian when I talk to him, and we get in big fights all the time because I just get frustrated at the differences sometimes. And I'm just like, how? You don't know what, you know, anytime you're talking to someone who I think they have their own battles, but when someone has such a different background to you, I think it's very obvious. Or when you walk into suburbs that don't have diversity or any of that kind of stuff, you walk into workplaces that don't have it. Like, I'm sure with all of you, that's when you feel Asian.
Yeah, well, Tiana, she works in marketing and then I work in media.
Mm.
And it's like 90% white people. And I'm like, I don't understand half the stuff that you're saying. You have a holiday house.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
Yeah. It's really strange, isn't it? I mean, I feel more and more Asian as I get older. I don't know. Do you speak Vietnamese at home, the two of you?
Mm. Yes, we do.
An
yes.
attempt, anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure I words all the time. Yeah, I speak Vietnamese at home. And I guess it just happens, right? You get much more. You want to feel a bit closer. To be honest with you, when I go to Vietnam, I love it there because I'm just like, oh, obviously these are my people. Like, let's get some fucking junk gin in here. Like, let's do this fur in the morning. I got it. Like
God, it blows my mind. Like, for me, it's a delicacy. Like, you have it like once a blue moon. But then they eat that shit on the street.
Every
like, it's
morning.
Like
morning.
Every morning. Morning. It's so their good. Breakfast. We have cereal. We're lucky.
Good. Having some bangwon just for fun. Yeah, I'm there. I'm there. It's awesome. It's great.
What's your ultimate favorite Vietnamese dish?
Oh, it's probably jung jin that my mum makes because she like that's just my comfort food. And I just love it. And then she makes a pho, and I'll just anything mum makes is great.
Mum's cooking pretty much.
But gun to my head, one meal, I'd be like, "Mum's jung jin." They'd be like, "Yeah, resurrect her from the doesn't matter." I'd like, pull her out from the ground.
I just need the recipe, please, Mum.
100%. What about yours?
I love bung bo hue.
Ah, yeah.
I love that. And ban xiao.
Ah, ban xiao.
Yes, the crispy goodness.
Yeah. So you're much more adventurous than I am. What about you?
I love fish.
Ah.
It's ga hop. Mm-hmm. It's like steamed ginger fish.
Yeah.
Mm, yum.
Yeah, fucking love that. I can live off of that. Oh, my Lord.
We are so lucky, though, because, like, I know we might sound super biased as three Asian Australian women, but
100% Asian food is the best.
Asian food is the best. Oh, oh my gosh. It's literally the best. It's like, and Vietnamese food is definitely, definitely in the top three. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, this weather, just perfect all the way. Yeah, we are very biased. If someone hears this, they're like, these guys are crazy. Being able to speak a language is part of being able to be connected to who you, like your roots, right?
Mm, for sure.
Being able to speak Vietnamese makes me feel more connected to all the aspects that make me feel different. And I'm sure my nieces will grow up and feel a bit different, but I wonder if they'll have that accessible. And also, like, when my dad writes a lot of poetry and I translate for him, but there's a lot of words that just you cannot translate, like with any language, a lot of words you can't translate.
Damn, there's a lot of words I can't understand.
Oh, you just got to make those ones up. Just ignore those ones. Yeah.
But that's so true. There are so many words that I, like a feeling, usually it's like a feeling that I can describe it easily in Vietnamese and it makes so much sense to me. Yes. But when I try to think of the English, version of that word, I'm just like, yeah, nah, it's not good.
There's so many sayings that I love as well. Like my dad says this one a lot, like, like it's irritating to the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just say it in English now. I'm like, it's itchy to the eyes, which sounds crazy, but it's just the best way I can think of it. I'm like, it's itchy to the eyes, because he used to say it all the time. Like if I did something, he'd be like, nah, I don't like it. I'm like, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, that's so true. Or when you say someone's cute and you say, you gay? Because they're so cute.
Yeah,
it's like you hate them because they're so cute, and then you say it in English, you're like, hang on a minute.
I don't know, but I guess like with music, with language, and all of that stuff, it's always just tools that help you. And this is a tool that I think really helps you connect with your family and your family for all of us who are growing up in a country that's different to the, you know, to the country that our parents were born in. That's that they're a connection back home or back to that stuff. So language will always help.
Yeah.
100%.
And it's always a big flex when you say you're bilingual.
Oh my gosh, I saw this meme the other day and I was like, holy crap, this is so true. On your resume, when you say, oh, I'm fluent in Vietnamese or highly proficient.
Yeah.
And then I think the meme was like, and then the guy asked, so can you, you know, give me some Vietnamese? And then the person's like, I panicked. And so I just counted to 10 in Vietnamese. And I was like, fair enough.
I remember once because I used to work at Meyer at like cosmetics thing for a cosmetics brand, and they were so excited and they said, we have this Vietnamese person in here and they can't speak English. Can you translate? And I was like, yeah, sure, no worries. And then I was like, Ginela toner. Because I'm like, what's the word for toner? And I'm like, boy, exfoliate. Like I just didn't know the words. I'm like, how can I possibly know the words? Rose water. Like I don't know. Yeah. I can kind of get to it, but yeah, the woman just looked at me and she's like, you're an idiot. And I'm like, I'm so sorry.
When it comes, like when I have to do that, where I can't think of the English, the Vietnamese translation for a particular English word, I try to describe what it is in whatever. Yes. Like if it was toner, I'd be like, oh, this is, pretend I'm speaking Vietnamese, I'll be like, oh yeah, this is water that you put on your face.
Yes.
And it makes your face soft. Like that's the limit of my Vietnamese ability. So I have to use those sort of language instead of using the like the actual.
That's good term. Though. I think that makes sense. It's better than just saying the English word, which is what I did. This is terrible. I don't know what to tell you.
I love that. Well, it's a bit like that, isn't it? You mix a little bit of English with your Vietnamese.
Yeah.
And actually one more thing that I'll say is I feel like now, like back in the day when my brother and I were growing up, my grandparents would always be like, you know, speak in Vietnamese, and we would speak in Vietnamese to each other. But as my younger cousins have grown up, my grandparents are now speaking, you know, a bit of English to my cousins, and I'm like, wow, man, you guys are lucky because you guys got off scot-free. Your girl here, she had to learn a thing or two.
Yeah. If you have children, do you think you'll, hypothetically, would you teach them Vietnamese?
Yeah, I would love to. As I think as we discussed, it's such an important part of your culture, right? So I would love to have my parents. I would love to have my children be able to speak to my parents or my grandparents just converse in the language because it's part of who they are. And, mm-hmm. you know, whether my partner is Vietnamese or not, I'd want them to learn whatever language that my partner speaks as well.
Yeah.
So they just have to be super smart future children.
I like the goals. Yeah, I like it.
What about you two?
I'd say the same. I know it was traumatic. It was a traumatic experience having to go to Vietnamese school every single Saturday at 9 a.m. in the morning, and I'm missing all of the good TV shows that were on, on the TV. I was always salty about that. I'm like, Mom, I want to all the days I got to stay home.
Saturday Disney?
And watch Saturday Disney. The days I got to stay home and watch the cartoons because I don't know, I'm sick or something like that. It was great. Anyway, sorry, I digress. Anyway, yeah, I'd love to teach all my kids, future kids, to understand Vietnamese, mainly because I really would like them to be able to speak to my parents, because my parents they can speak and understand English, but very, very like minimal. Mm-hmm. Like I have trouble talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
So let alone like, you know, if my future kids can't even speak Vietnamese at all, it would be a massive disconnect between the two. And I want them to have that sort of connection as much as they can, as much as they possibly can. Because I know my nephew and nieces, they can't speak Vietnamese. The only thing my mom can say to them is like, I love you, or you know, just very basic. Or sometimes like the kids, my nieces and nephews will be going off saying, like talking about their day, or like, yeah, look at this coloring book. Well, I did this, look at what I made. And my mom will just be like, ha, 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 yes, yes. Like just agreeing to everything they're saying, but not really understanding what they're saying. And it's kind of like, it sucks that they don't have that sort of connection between the two because of the language, purely like the language barrier. So I think that's one thing I'd really want them to have. If you fancy yourself a sweet, refreshing treat, our lovely friends at Scoopy, Melbourne's go-to bingsu joint, are offering our listeners a cheeky 15% off all their orders at their two stores. They have one in the heart of Melbourne on Guildford Lane and in Glen Waverley.
So just use the code UA15 at the checkout for 15% off. Please note the offer is subject to change, so remember to check in each episode for the fresh new code. Woo! Thanks, Scoopy. We love y'all.
A lot of us know you because you are, as we said before, one of the founding mothers of YouTube, or you are one of the OG YouTubers, and I hope that's not offensive for us to say.
No, it's just surprising.
Or one of the ones that a lot of us were subscribed to. So tell us about your YouTube journey. How did you start creating videos? Where did inspiration come from? And what welcomed you to the platform?
Yeah, I was at uni when I started. I think I was 19 or something like that, and my parents had bought me an iMac and it had a little webcam in it.
Oh, and so fancy.
Super fancy, like super fancy.
Actually really fancy.
No, it was. I remember my dad came with me to uni and he was like, we get a discount if we buy it, if we buy you a computer, would you like a computer? I was like, oh my god, yes. So he bought me an iMac. It was the best. And I read about, you guys aren't going to understand this because you're 25, but I read about this thing called Lonely Girl 15 in the newspaper. So this is a crazy sentence. And Lonely Girl 15 was a YouTube channel, and it was an actor who had been pretending to vlog at the time, but everyone was captivated thinking that someone was vlogging. It was actually really cool. I don't know if we've had something like this now, but she was pretending to. Well, like they had written, the studio was behind it or whatever, and they'd written this character. She was a vlogger and her family were part of a cult, so it was kind of exciting and all this stuff. Turned out she wasn't real, and but I hopped on like after the discovery and I found YouTube was a really nice small community, and people were doing a thing called video responses then, which was you could post a video in response to another video and people would see it underneath the video. So it was a lot more interactive.
I remember that. Wow. That was like unlocking a really old memory of mine.
Yeah. Well, that's what got me into YouTube, was that I would watch all the video responses and then you'd find people who you liked through that. You could make videos back to them. And it was just stuff that I did around uni and my work. And it was just a very slow growth. And I'm a big nerd, so I really enjoyed being online at home and chat rooms and weird things like that. But it was just a really nice small place. That's all. Just a nice outlet.
The landscape's changed so much, eh?
Really, so yeah, you haven't seen Happy Slip. You should check out Happy Slip. It's probably, yeah, Happy Slip was a big thing. Kev Jumba was big.
Oh, Kev Jumba, yeah.
Oh, I love Kev Jumba.
Yeah, and Niga Higa and the Wine Cone. I don't know if you know the Wine Cone, probably not. But the Wine Cone was big for me and it was really Asian back then. Full of Asians up on the top list. You'd go to the homepage. They don't have it anymore, but you'd go to the homepage and it'd have a list of the top subscribe channels.
So many
of them were Asian.
Mm-hmm.
I loved just – but I love anything that's kind of a bit more raw or not gone through networks. So even the username community channel was because of Channel 31 in Australia, which is a community channel. Mm-hmm. I really liked that, which is like a version of YouTube on TV. So, yeah, it was a really fun space.
And it's so interesting because, like, those were the top channels back in the day, right? Mm. But now I feel like those are the top channels within the Asian landscape.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's become a lot more broad now. Everyone kind of jumped on board. I don't know, maybe Asians are more, maybe especially Asian Americans. And I loved this. They used to call me an Asian American all the time back then. Like, an Asian American. I'm like, sure, why not? but maybe Asian Americans were online a lot more during that time or something at the beginning. Maybe we're more adapt. Maybe we come to new technology much more than other people do.
You know, you mentioned like, you know, Wong Fu, Kev Jumba, Niga Higa, and there were so many others like Fung Bros and stuff. And like they have such a booming community within that entertainment online kind of space, the Asian American community. And it's awesome. It's awesome to see it grow. And I think when we were younger, we would really gravitate towards that type of content because we were like, oh, in a way I can kind of relate to you because you're Asian, even though, like, I guess the American side I can't really relate. And so that's honestly one of the reasons why Twi and I started this podcast, because, you know, I was listening to like Asian Boss Girl and all of these podcasts because I thought, oh yeah, I can kind of relate to what they're saying. But I noticed that, hey, there's not really any Asian Australian podcasters out there, or there's not really anyone sharing the Asian Australian stories. And you know, we all have stories and different voices, and that's kind of one of the reasons why we started. So we wanted to kind of add or insert ourselves in an area where I just feel like there's not many of us. But yeah, it's so cool now, Nat, because this community is definitely growing. There's a lot of Asian Australian creators out there now, and I'm sure you saw when they all commented on our post, but a lot of them all look up to you as well. So
crazy. Yeah. I feel like races, I mean, I know we talk about race so much in Australia, but perhaps what you're talking about, like Asian American Asian, like I feel like it's so much more dominant over there. Asian Australian isn't a term. I must admit it's not a term I heard very much. Like, it's not something, it's very recent. Yeah, it probably wouldn't come naturally to me to say, just because I haven't grown up with it.
Yeah, I think among the younger generation, even younger than Tiana and I, it's becoming a well-recognized term. Like, it's going to sound so millennial, but like on TikTok.
Yeah.
The tags that you see on TikTok, people tag like Asian Australian, and there's like a lot of content related to that. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's really exciting. I'm really excited to see it grow. We talked about it before, but like growing up, we didn't really see any of our type of peoples on screen.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, we've got like big name movies, Marvel and stuff coming out with like a full Asian cast and all that.
I know, Shang-Chi did so well, didn't it? I'm so happy for them.
Oh, so well. I cannot wait to see it. I'm so excited. Have you seen it, Nat?
No, I haven't seen it, but I feel I feel really embarrassed because when Simu came to Australia, we caught up for lunch, but I knew him obviously from Kim's Convenience. I was so excited. I forgot about the whole Marvel thing. Like, I just thought he was here for Kim's Convenience. And he was like, I've been working out really hard. And I was like, huh, really? Like, really?
What?
I was like, wow. Like, and I thought about it in my head and I was like, I guess he's really fit in Kim's Convenience. And he was like, yeah. And he was like, everyone is working out. I'm like, everyone. And so I'm thinking of like Upper and like everyone in the show working out really hardcore. And he's telling me his regime. And obviously, like for Marvel people, it is an insane regime. Like he's working out nonstop. And I was just imagining like everyone from Kim's Convenience doing it. I'm like, wow, that's really and then here he is now, just like a huge block. As I walked away, I was like, oh, what are you talking about? He's about to be like the next big thing. Like, what are you talking about?
I freaking love that. He was probably confused the whole time. Like, why aren't you more impressed than you are right now?
I feel so bad. I was like, Kim's Convenience. I loved Kim's Convenience.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I was just like, I'm so sorry. I hadn't been thinking. I forgot to write him an apology. I really wasn't thinking about Kim's Convenience. I was like, that's already exciting, but Marvel is obviously super exciting. It's amazing. I'm so pumped for them, you know, like the success after everyone being worried about it and then it just absolutely thrashing it. It's wonderful.
We were just touching on the amazing success of Shang-Chi. So I think a lot before we saw the rise of Asians in Hollywood, right, like with Crazy Rich Asians, and we saw Always Be My Maybe, and now we've got Shang-Chi, this Marvel movie, which is doing amazing. But before then, I think a lot of the Asians that we would see in media would be on platforms like YouTube, and we kind of discussed that a bit before as well. In 2015, we know that you had this video where you went to Brown University and you spoke about Asians in media.
Yeah.
You made a lot of good points about the different nuances of Asians in media and about how we're portrayed. Do you think, like, since then, what's the progression been like for Asians in media? And do you think that it's become more diverse, or is the industry largely lagging behind, or?
Especially Australian media.
Australian media is different. I'll talk about media as a whole and then I'll talk about Australian media.
Okay.
I think definitely there's been huge jumps. I mean, we just listed a whole bunch of things that are huge. And I mean, I just saw the trailer this morning for Remy he is an Australian actor, and he's just playing a gorgeous, because he is gorgeous.
Oh my gosh, he is very, very gorgeous.
It's ridiculous. Like, when you see him, you're like, how can you be more handsome in real life? That doesn't it's just ridiculous. And I was chatting to Ronnie about this, and he was like, he doesn't have any pores. And I'm like, I know, it's crazy. And, you know, he's this gorgeous romantic lead, as he should be. And I've seen, you know, in Marco Polo, he was great. You know, he's been a lot of stuff. And I think that all of that, you know, he was in Crazy Rich Asians, a whole bunch of people were. But yeah, definitely I think it's improved and changed. And I'm always pumped to see all of that stuff. Like, really watching that trailer and seeing Remy, I'm like, yeah, that's where he should be. Like, 100%, that guy's a leading man. I should always be seeing him on my screen. It's changed a lot. Personally, this might be a little bit a boomer of me. I'm not a boomer, but I might be a bit boomer. I don't know if we're treating diversity the best way when it comes to film and television.
Okay, elaborate on that.
Well, I feel like we're getting a bit of segregation in the kinds of shows we're seeing. Like, I feel like people might go, that's an Asian movie. That's a diverse movie. That's a this. And I feel a little bit cynical, because sometimes I watch things now and I'm like, it's really funny, but you know, when you watch things and they'll have the main cast will still be white. And then I call it a minority dump, where just everyone around them is a person of color. And it looks kind of crazy, because I'm like I'll watch scenes where a boardroom will just be filled with people of color because the whole main cast is white. Really see many boardrooms filled with huge amounts of people of color. Hire a person of color in your main cast, like, don't be cowards. So I worry a little bit that we're getting things that are like, oh, that's a this movie and that's a this movie, whereas I'd rather just see everything and just see everyone all together. But maybe that's a tall order, and we're obviously in a part of history where things have to swing one way before they come, you know. I just don't think we've gotten there yet, but that's not anyone's fault. I think anything takes a long time, you know.
For sure.
Whenever you do anything, there's going to be a big gap before you can close it. I remember watching, I don't know if you've seen the show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, but I think they do diversity pretty well in that show. Like, I don't feel it. And I think that's the thing, is I don't want to feel it. I don't want to feel a quota. I don't want to feel like you're ticking boxes. I look forward to the day I don't feel like that. Australia's interesting. Australia's media is always a little bit behind with that kind of stuff, you know.
Like we are with everything.
Yes, like we are, but we are very far away from everyone.
That's true.
Postage is very expensive.
Oh my God.
I don't know. I guess I'd rather focus on the positive. I say that after I was really negative. But, you know, I'm so excited to see all the things that have happened. And like you said, I did that talk in 2015. It's 2021. We've had 2 years of a pandemic, so 2 years of bad times, and so much has happened still. It's a handful of years, and it's huge. Like, this Marvel movie has been the most successful, hasn't it?
It overtook Black Widow.
Yeah.
as being one of the most successful releases, which is amazing.
Incredible.
I think what you said, though, is totally valid, because it's like this notion of normalizing Asians in media, or normalizing people of color in media, rather. Like, it should be just a true reflection of real life, which is that we live in a very diverse society where every day you're going to encounter people that are white, people of color, but it's about like normalizing it rather than, as you said, like having that checkered box and like ticking it off and being like, okay, we've cast, you know, 50% of the cast is this and that. Although that does help and contribute towards progress, it's like we want to eventually just be able to normalize it.
Yeah, and look, to be honest, when you've said that, I've realized as well the big problem is that I'm older than you. I've grown up with an extra decade of not seeing it on screen. Mm. So it's probably me noticing the checkboxes, if that makes sense. Mm. I'm sure younger people probably don't. So that's definitely
highly,
it's probably a bias that I carry, and I'm sure that in a couple of years I won't notice it at all, which is a great thing, right? So yeah.
It is a goal to have that normalized, and exciting because we're working towards it.
An interesting thing happens with cast. Like, I feel like I look forward as well to more blind casting. And I find it interesting because they'll write in brackets like POC next to the roles that I auditioned for.
That's true.
I'm not a fan of that, and sometimes I'll get a bit shitty and I'll send it back. But, I mean, it's tough, right? I've spoken to writers about it and they go, hey, man, if we don't write that in, they don't look outside of a white cast, and so they go, we put that in so that you get auditions. But again, maybe because I carry so much weight on my shoulders, I go, well, why do you put that in at all? Now I feel like I'm just here because I'm filling a checkbox.
Yeah,
it's hard. And I mean, a part of the pride of me sometimes is like, if I see it, I'm like, no, not interested. But then I heard something else that I can't remember who said it, but they put it very eloquently, which was a lot more eloquently than I did, but it was essentially, you shouldn't feel embarrassed if someone makes space for you because of your background. White men have been given things all the time because of their background. So take it proudly. So I have to remember that. And I think that's a good thing to remember.
I felt that.
you feel bad. Like sometimes you're, oh, they're just giving this to me because of this. And I'm like, well, they just give things to people because of that all the time.
Yeah, that's true. And it's if we have to play the card, then we'll play the card.
Hey, just saying, once I played the POC card and I got a free coffee machine out of it.
Where were you playing it? At a coffee machine shop?
So there was like this competition at work where they had this kind of like online fitness class. And if you take a photo of yourself after the class and you upload it to Instagram, you tag them, the company in it, then you go into the draw to win a coffee machine. Because like that competition was pretty much only open to people within our workspace. And like I said before, 90% white people. And I was like, surely, like, come on. I'm like the only Asian to do it. And then because it's a part of like a publicity stunt as well, right? Yeah. Like a PR thing. Anyway, they announced 4 winners. Mm-hmm. I was only, okay, mind you, I posted this on my private account as well. And my private account has like very, very tiny, tiny, minimal followers. Okay, so I was one of the winners. And the 3 other winners were these beautiful white women, all with at least 30,000 followers each.
Yeah.
And I was just like, look.
You got it.
I got it. I got a free coffee machine out of it.
Good.
It's a win.
I do think as well, like, businesses don't care about humans. They don't.
They don't.
So like when they do HR stunts and stuff like that, just do it, man. Like, who cares? Take the coffee machine, drink it, have a great time.
I am having a lovely time. It was so worth it.
Awesome. So you mentioned you had Ben Law on your show, and Ben, Michelle, who is the playwright, writer, amazing, and Q Ming, who is now at Netflix Australia, has been for a year, but they invited me out to lunch. And this is one of the things that I love about how these communities are available and how we're so much more connected. Things like your podcast are really important. And when Ben invited me, I was like, really? I don't know you guys. I can come and meet you. He's like, yeah. And then I got there and very funny. They clapped when I got there. Like, yay. Like I was the queen arriving.
Oh,
like,
so cute.
It was just so wonderful. And they said, yeah, welcome to the Secret Asians meeting. And I was like, this is wonderful. I love secret clubs. I've never been to one. But I guess you have always been a part of one. It's just that you didn't know that you had meetups and you didn't know where to find each other. And they've just been so supportive. And Ben has written me, sometimes, like, you should apply for this. This is available for Asian Australian creators and gosh, like, how do you not feel like a big part of a family that you've just found?
There's a massive, like, untapped community aspect within the Asian Australian, like, landscape that we haven't tapped into just yet, but it is there and it is growing and is building, and it's just up to us to reach out and take hold of it.
It is so good. It's like being part of a good mafia. But seriously, like, Q, I didn't know Q very well, and she, you know, we'd interacted on Twitter, and she said, you know, if you ever want to meet up. So I went to ABC where she worked at the time. She was amazingly kind, and she had two keep cups ready for us.
Oh, she's bless, like, the keep cups.
Yeah, she's gorgeous. She had two keep cups. She's like, let's go. Let's have a tea. Let's talk about things. Mm. And, I mean, I could, sorry, get quite emotional thinking about this, but to feel so isolated, and then, and it, like, especially when I, you know, I'd love to do media stuff, but I haven't really had connections. I haven't really known people, didn't even think about it as a career. And then you have this person who just goes, hey, here's my time, and let me help you, or at least let me talk to you about what, like, what can happen, or what it's like. It was amazing. And I know she always had her door open. I know she's a lot busier now, but when she worked at ABC, and I know she still would definitely try and strive for this, but she was always like, yeah, if you need to chat, I'm here. And I was like, wow, yeah, like, this new sister who I didn't know I had. That's incredible.
It really,
I
can't
believe it's like you're part of a family.
It really is a family. And I've noticed that, especially within a lot of, like, Asian clubs and stuff, there is a big emphasis on family vibes.
Yeah. That and Corrie Chen was at our lunch as well. Sorry, I shouldn't.
You just spilled all the secrets in your secret Asian club.
I'm telling you who they were, where they live. Which I don't even know if Michelle was there.
They,
maybe
they
Michelle
should not
wasn't
have invited
there.
You, Nat.
No.
You really are bad. The mole.
Corrie was there. I know, I am the mole. I dobbed them out. I'm the police informant. But but I remember, and this made me laugh as well, but ages ago, a friend of mine, something was talking about Glee. You guys are a bit young for Glee, right?
Nah, Glee. I remember Glee.
So Harry was in Glee, and he came to Australia because Wong Fu, by the way, the guys from Wong Fu, you want to talk community? You want, those guys are like the godfather. Like, you need to know someone, you chat to those guys.
Yeah, they know everybody. Like, all the Asian actors came through Wong Fu.
Literally.
You know, everyone. So I met this violinist, Ray Chan, who was incredible. And, of course, I looked at his thing the other month, and I was like, you know Phil from Wong Fu? He's like, yeah, of course I know Phil. I'm like, yeah, of course you know Phil. Like, of course you know Phil. But when Harry came to Australia, when they were doing like a tour for Glee, Phil set us up, introduced us, and we hung out. And then my friend, who's not Asian, said, how do you know Harry? And then he laughed. He was like, is it because you're Asian? And I was like, yeah, it is actually. That's actually just it. We're just a big community.
And I freaking love that.
It's the best. I can't even lie to you. But that's how I met Simu. Like, how amazing is that?
It's amazing.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Where you can feel isolated, and then all of a sudden there's just this big family. And it's even weirder in a way because we have very different backgrounds. Mm. Like, the three of us are Vietnamese, Australian, but we already talk about the difference between us and being Asian American.
Mm.
And some of them aren't Vietnamese at all. But then you meet each other and you're just like, yeah, cool. Hey, what's up? Like, and it's just, you sit down and it's like, you know each other.
That's one of the most rewarding parts about this project is that we can meet so many people in the community, whether they're creators or whether they're listeners or everyone in between. It's amazing to see that everyone can be connected by, you know, their shared stories and voices and stuff.
And, like, genuinely feel this way. But at the end of each of our conversations with all of the amazing Asians that we've had, you know, the chance to talk to, I always feel warm and fuzzy at the end of it.
Yeah, of course.
Really warm and fuzzy every single time.
I had this, I always remember this. This lovely girl came up to me at a meet once, meet and greet, and she said, hey, Nat, I'm Philo too.
Oh, that's cute.
Oh my god, it's just like one of my favorite moments. And I said to her, oh, I'm not Philo. And she got so upset, and I was like, no, but yeah, man, like, I get it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm here, I get it, yes. And I just loved that moment where she was just like, I'm Philo too. And I'm like, I'm not, but like, yeah, I'm here, man. I'm your sister,
I'll be what you need.
But it is like, it's like a really big family, and it's wonderful. Like, I'm so pumped that all these networks are coming to light and they're available for people. I love that resources are around, like your podcast. I think it's going to help so many people feel like they have family out there. It's going to help so many people feel like they belong more. None of that can be, yeah, it's nothing but good.
It's the sense of belonging. That's what we need.
Yeah, for sure.
Love that. Well, that's why we loved watching you, Nat, because we felt belonging through watching, you know, an Asian on screen. And also, I want to note that one of the major reasons why I really liked your content was because you showed, like, you know, first world problems, just everyday normal human problems that I could relate to. And it didn't have to be like specifically Asian or something, but I had those lived experiences as well. And it was just refreshing seeing that portrayed by someone who looked like me.
Exactly.
I felt so normal. I felt comfortable. That's the thing. I just felt so comfortable watching your videos. There's that extra level of connection between me watching your videos because that familiarity that I can see on screen.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. I mean, like I did the same thing with other creators. Like I said, I was a big fan of everyone around, like who was uploading at the time, and still big fan. Like this is really weird, but I remember one of my first videos that I watched of Wong Fu was them dancing, and I was just like, these guys are so cool. I need to be their, like, I was like, I want to watch all their videos. I need to be their friend one day. And now
now you are.
I'm like, it's you Phil. You know, Phil's so cool. It's ridiculous. So are all of them, Wes and Ted, but yeah, it's really cool. But I love all the stuff they do. It's it's really important to have that. I'm really grateful that you have a resource like this for people out there.
Oh, well, we're all feeling really warm and fuzzy right now. So. The last question that we want to ask, it underpins the heart and soul of our podcast. And that is, what makes you unapologetically Asian?
I guess I'm unapologetically Asian because I'm really proud of being Asian. And I'll defend it. I don't know. It's just, I don't think there's anything to be apologetic about. So I guess it's just who I am. It's who I am I speak Vietnamese at home. It's who I default back to. I'm sorry, I don't have a very eloquent answer.
No, that's fine.
That makes total sense. Why would you have to be sorry about something that, you know, you default to?
Of course.
Nat, it has been an absolute pleasure and a half to have you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for spending your Friday evening with us and for giving up your time. I know we scheduled this in for 1 hour, but we've well and truly gone to 2 hours. So love that for us. But thank you so much. It's been amazing to meet you and also to have you share your stories and experiences to our audience. And I know that they'll resonate with a lot of the things you said. Yes. And they will appreciate it as much as we have. So thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, no, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And yeah, thank you again. It's been amazing. I'm sorry you'll have to edit so much.
No, no. Be sure to check out our gal, Nat, on Community Channel on YouTube. She's got some really funny videos. And if you haven't seen them, then please go binge watch them because they're amazing. Yes. Very bingeable content. And also you can find Nat on Instagram as well.
Oh, thank you. Very kind.
And Twitter. You're very funny on Twitter.
Am I?
Oh, and thank you to you all that have been listening. We hope that you enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. And if you like what you listen to, remember to follow, subscribe to us. And you can find us on all of your favorite podcasting platforms.
Mm-hmm. And we're also on Instagram as well, on the social media. So you can find us at unapologeticallyAZN.
Hell yeah.
Amazing. Well, we'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.